On Three does not think that Texas has a top 10 cornerback room in the country, and I'm here to tell you I vehemently disagree with On Three.
You are Locked On Longhorns, your daily podcast on the Texas Longhorns. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Longhorns, the show. Jonathan Davis, your host. Today's episode of Locked On Longhorns is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/Locked On today to get started. On today's episode of Locked On Longhorns, we are talking about On Three's top 10 cornerback rooms in the country. Texas did not make the list. I was very surprised by that. Then we're talking about the Texas basketball team twofold. The first is Ron Holland has not been released from his NLI yet. What does that mean for the Texas basketball team? And secondly, two high-profile players entered the transfer portal yesterday, players that Texas might have interest in. We discuss all of that and more on today's episode of Locked On Longhorns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So when we talk about On Three, their position group rankings have gotten a lot of burn on Locked On Longhorns. If you've been listening over the last week, we talked about the quarterback room, which was ranked third in the country by On Three. We talked about the wide receiver room, which was ranked second in the country by On Three. And we talked about the offensive line unit, which was ranked fifth in the country by On Three. They released running back rankings. Texas did not make the top 10. I understood that because we lost Bijan and Roshan, even though I think we have a really talented running back room. We did not make the top 10 defensive line rankings. I definitely understood that one. Did not make the top 10 defensive coordinator list in college football. Pete Kwiatkowski definitely deserves some consideration there. And maybe he did get it. You know, I'm not mad about him not being on the list. And then Steve Sarkisian is our offensive coordinator, but Kyle Flood is our offensive coordinator on paper. So it made sense why we didn't make the top 10 offensive coordinators list. I think if Steve Sarkisian was listed as the offensive coordinator, obviously he would be on that list. But nonetheless, the On Three position room rankings have gotten a lot of burn on Locked On Longhorns over the last week, and they're going to continue to do so because they released their top 10 cornerback rooms in the country. I'm trying real hard to enunciate that so you don't think I'm talking about quarterbacks. Their top 10 cornerback rooms in the country were released yesterday, and I'll be the first one to say that I'm not an expert on every team's cornerback room in the country. And if I'm going to sit here and say that Texas has a top 10 cornerback room in the country, then I would have to take somebody off their list, and I don't think I have enough knowledge to do that. So what I'll say is, if Texas does not have a top 10 cornerback room in the country, they definitely have one of the best and one of the more underrated in college football heading into the 2023 season. When you look at On Three's top 10 list in terms of cornerback rooms in the country, it starts with Alabama. I know they have Kool-Aid McKinstry coming back, probably the best returning corner in college football, and it's Alabama, right? They're going to keep some good DBs, so I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on that one. Georgia at number two, they've won two straight national championships. I don't think I can name a corner on their team right now, but I know they're going to be some good ones, right? So Georgia at number two, I'm fine with that. Iowa has always had a really good defense. They're at number three. I'm cool with that. Michigan has been really good. College football playoff team the last 2 years. I'm good with that. Penn State at number five. They just lost Joey Porter Jr., but I'm assuming the rest of their DBs are really good as well. Notre Dame at number six. I have to take your word for it. TCU at number seven. They just lost Tomlinson. I have a feeling Texas is going to put up a lot of points on TCU, but as of right now, we'll leave them at number seven. Ohio State at number eight. Got to take your word for it. LSU at number nine. They did win the SEC West last year. You have to have a good defense to win in the SEC. So, you know, I'll take your word for it. Texas A&M, they won five games last year. So, I mean, if they have the top 10 cornerback room in the country, what did they do? Right? But, you know, this is a Longhorn podcast, so I talk too much about the Aggies. They'll, you know, get me for bullying. So let's talk about the Texas cornerback room and why I think if it's not a top 10 room in the country, it's at least one of the more talented and one of the more underrated in the country going into the season. And it starts with Ryan Watts. And I think last year our defense was so much improved from 2022 as opposed to 2021. And one of the biggest reasons for that was the improvement of the back end, right? And you brought in Ryan Watts in the transfer portal. And as we saw in 2021, in the first year under Pete Kwiatkowski, in the first year under Steve Sarkisian, period, this is a tough defense to come in, learn, and excel in year one. And that's exactly what Ryan Watts did as a transfer last year from Ohio State. So he gave up 344 yards total in coverage on the season on 49 targets. That's 7 yards per target, 11 and a half yards per reception. Both of those numbers are really good. If you're giving up 11 and a half yards per reception to outside receivers in college football, you're doing a damn good job in coverage. When you look at his PFF grades overall, right, all of these numbers I'm about to say in this first segment are for PFF. That's in case I forget to keep saying it, right? All of these numbers are from PFF. Defensive grade of 70.6 for a corner, that is really good. Tackle grade of 75.6, that is elite for somebody from the cornerback position, Ryan Watts. Pressure grade of 72.5. I wonder what that number would look like if he got that sack on Bryce Young in week two that could have clinched that game. Run defense, a 78 grade. That is elite for a corner. We know that Ryan Watts is one of the best run defenders at the corner position in college football. You don't need a PFF grade to tell you that. And then a coverage grade of 67.7. Could he be better in coverage? Of course. But 67.7 is more than adequate for a starting corner in the Big 12. Ryan Watts was one of the best defenders on this team last year, and he returns as one of the best corners in college football. Then you talk about Jahdae Barron, who is not one of the most underrated corners in college football. He's one of the most underrated players in college football. And it makes all the sense in the world to me now why last offseason Oregon offered him $200,000 to enter the transfer portal. My first thought was like, why him? Right? Not that's not even no disrespect to Jahdae Barron. Let me not say it like that. But I wasn't thinking that Jahdae Barron was somebody that teams would tamper to get, right? But after last season, I completely understand. And I say he's one of the more underrated players, not just corners, but players in the country, because I saw a top 10 nickel corners list, right? A top 10 slot slash nickel corners list, not just corners in college football, period. Not just corners on the outside, but corners specifically in the slot. It was top 50. And yet, Jahdae Barron was not on that list. So whoever made that list does not watch college football at all. When you look at what he was able to do last year, he gave up 268 yards last year on 68 targets. When you look at the numbers, that's 4 yards per target, 5.6 yards per reception. Now, you can't compare these apples to apples or oranges to oranges to Ryan Watts' numbers, because Ryan Watts is, you know, primarily playing on the outside, covering more explosive receivers, while Jahdae Barron is covering slot receivers, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage, shorter routes, and covering tight ends. But these numbers are elite. Once again, 4 yards per target, 5.6 yards per reception for Jahdae Barron last year. And when you look at his overall grades from PFF, they are elite. Overall defensive grade of 76.9 from a corner, a run defense grade of 77.5 from a corner, a tackle grade of 65.9 from somebody that's playing in the box as a corner, a pressure grade of 82.4 from a corner, and a coverage grade of 74.7. Regardless of what you asked Jahdae Barron to do last year, he more than likely did it at an elite level, and you also have him returning to the 40 acres this year. Now let's look at Terrence Brooks, who only played 186 snaps last year, most of those in relief of DeShawn Jameson or in just kind of your normal cornerback rotation. But he did play 67 snaps against TCU, right? That's the only game in which he played starter-level snaps. Now, his overall grades for the season weren't great. They all hovered around 50, but I think, you know, he's a true freshman. He's coming in spot duty, random assignments, random plays, doesn't really have a set role. I can't blame him for not having a great true freshman year. That's why I'm going to go more so off the numbers in which he had a defined role and played as a starter against TCU. And when you look at these grades, 69.4 defensive grade for a true freshman corner, that's really good. Run defense grade, 66.4, that's really good. Tackling grade, 79.1, that's elite. Did not get in a position to have a pressure grade and a 68.7 coverage grade from a true freshman against one of the top offenses in college football. A team that went to the Natty was really good. Terrence Brooks, as a true freshman, allowed one catch for 8 yards in that game. That's your number three corner that's returning as a true sophomore to the University of Texas. Then you look at Gavin Holmes, who you brought in the transfer portal, somebody that was really good at Wake Forest the last 2 years. Now let's dive a little bit deeper into the numbers, right? So the last 2 years, he's given up 527 yards on 74 targets. He's given up 7 yards per target, similar to what Ryan Watts gave up last year. That's really good. Now the difference is Ryan Watts gave up 11 and a half yards per reception. Gavin Holmes gave up 16 yards per reception. I talked about a receiver on the outside averaging 11 and a half yards per reception, not being explosive, not being a game breaker. Somebody averaging 16 yards per catch, that's definitely what that is. But the silver lining when you look at Gavin Holmes' numbers is he only has a 45% catch percentage. So when he does give up catches, he gives up big catches and big plays. But the good thing is he only gives up 45%. He only has a 45% catch to target rate. So on 100% of his targets, only 45% of them have been caught. That's really good from a smaller corner in Gavin Holmes. And then when you look at his best grades from the last two seasons, I think his 2021 season was better than his 2022 season. But these are his best grades from the last 2 years. Defensive grade, 67.9. Sorry if y'all saw that on YouTube. My phone just dropped. Sounded like somebody was breaking in here, right? Defensive grade, 67.9. That was from 2021, I believe, but that was really good. Run defense, 63.2. That's really good for a 5'11", 175-pound corner. Now, his tackle grade is down at a 36. PFF gives him 13 missed tackles over the last 2 years. Not sure how they grade that. They had Trill Carter as a defensive tackle with a really poor tackle grade. So, you know, maybe he did miss 13 tackles over the last 2 years. We'll just have to see, you know, how that comes to fruition on the football field. A pressure grade of 58.1. He's a corner. I don't really need my corners to be great at rushing the passer, right? Although Jahdae Barron and Ryan Watts are really good at doing that. And then a 71.3 coverage grade. You'll take that week in and week out, right? So Gavin Holmes is a really good football player, especially at his size at 5'11", 175. Like I said, he does have a tendency to give up big catches and big plays, but for the most part, he limits catches to begin with a 45% catch percentage. And then your fifth corner in the room, and this is no disrespect to Austin Jordan, Xavier Bryce, Jalen Gilbo. It just speaks to how good the room is. But I'm thinking of how somebody who is not affiliated with the program would rate this room, and it would probably be four players that have college football experience, like a lot of it. And then Malik Muhammad, your highest ranked recruit in the room, right? And so Malik Muhammad was ranked by 24/7 Composite as the 45th overall player and the fourth best corner coming into this season. So if I look at the top five in the room of Malik Muhammad, Gavin Holmes, Terrence Brooks, Ryan Watts, and Jahdae Barron, based on what they did last year and what they have coming back, like I said, you can't convince me that's not one of the top 10 cornerback rooms in the country. And if it isn't one of the top 10 cornerback rooms in the country, it's definitely one of the best and one of the more underrated units in college football heading into the 2023 season. A quick word from Built Bar, and then we're going to talk about Ron Holland. Why has the University of Texas not released him from his letter of intent? Looking for a delicious snack but don't want all of the sugar and calories? Then you need the best tasting protein bar ever. Built, you got to try this. If you're like me and you want to make healthier snack choices, but you don't want to compromise on taste, I've got just the thing for you. Built Bars and Built Puffs. Built Bars are healthy and taste amazing. Seriously, they taste so amazing, you won't think they're good for you. You got to try this. What makes Built Bars so good? Well, for starters, they are all covered in 100% real dark chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. And they come in amazing flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, and cookies and cream. I'm not sure how Built does it, but these bars taste like a candy bar while maintaining amazing macros. And what's even better is that they are healthy, only 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar with a whopping 17 grams of protein. Now you don't need to wait to get a box. For years, we've been talking about ordering Built Bars at Built.com, but now you can get them at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, while still getting your specialty flavors at Built.com. So whether it's at Sam's Club, Walmart, the website, your best friend's house, wherever you get your Built Bars, go grab them today. I was laughing a little bit during that segment because I didn't see my phone drop, or I didn't hear my phone drop off of this little ledge that I'm recording on. I just heard boom when it hit the ground. And like I said, I didn't know if somebody was trying to break in the house. I didn't know what happened. I looked down and saw my phone and, you know, just breathe a breath of fresh air. But God, I was nervous when I heard that. That was loud, man. It didn't sound like a phone. It sounded like a gunshot or something. Jesus. Anyways, let's talk about the Texas basketball team. And Ron Holland, we learned yesterday from 24/7 Sports, released a story that Ron Holland has not been released from his NLI just yet. And he decommitted. Can't remember exactly when he decommitted. I know it was the Friday after the first round of the NFL draft, because Max Amos, who probably didn't want a lot of attention on him, committed right before the NFL draft that Thursday. And then Ron Holland decommitted that next day. So it's been about 2 weeks since Ron Holland decommitted. And this was a tough loss to the University of Texas. And, you know, at this time, you had not brought in Kendall Weaver and Zariq Onyema yet. You had not heard anything back from Dylan Mitchell or Tyrese Hunter yet. And so, and at that point, you had already just lost AJ Johnson probably a week or two before that. So when you lost Ron Holland, who has now moved up on multiple sites to the number one recruit in the country, that's a huge loss, right? And especially it came at a time of uncertainty when Ronnie Terry had just gotten the job. So it was kind of impossible to look at it through a lens of Ronnie Terry gets the job and then Ron Holland and AJ Johnson decommit, even though both of those players had publicly endorsed Ronnie Terry to be the head coach at the University of Texas and stayed committed for months after they made those endorsements, right? Yeah, stayed committed for months after they made those endorsements. We just saw Ron Holland at the All-American game, what, 2 months ago, endorse Rodney Terry for the full-time head coaching job after he got it and said he was excited to come to the University of Texas and play for Rodney Terry. Well, obviously, he said he was coming with A.J. Johnson. That's not happening because A.J. Johnson has gone on to play professional basketball in Australia for the same team that Josh Giddey and LaMelo Ball played for previously. And Ron Holland has decommitted and requested a release from his NLI. And a lot of the smoke about Ron Holland is towards either the G League. The G League has been recruiting him for a long time. We know he's going to be a one-and-done player, so it would make sense to get a jump start on playing professional basketball. And then Arkansas, who's done a really good job of recruiting in the DFW area the last few years. They have Nick Black, I think, coming back, who was Ron Holland's teammate at Duncanville. They've also put together a really good transfer class. So, you know, maybe he sees that as an appealing option. And right now it seems as though Texas, Arkansas, and the G League are the three biggest competitors for Ron Holland's services, albeit 1 year, but for Ron Holland's services next season. And when you talk about what's going on with his NLI, you know, one thing I learned from Colin Cowherd watching The Herd is when you see stories come out, a lot of times you have to sit back and think, who would benefit from this story coming out, right? And obviously the University of Texas would not benefit from a story coming out saying they have not released Ron Holland from his NLI yet. NIL, such a tongue twister. So that makes me think that Ron Holland in his camp went to 24/7 to release this news, that the University of Texas has not released him from his NLI. Now, according to 24/7, the reason that the University of Texas has not released Ron Holland from his NLI just yet is because they believe there may have been some tampering or some funny business going on. Basically, they believe either the G League, which wouldn't make sense, I'll explain that in a minute, or Arkansas came to Ron Holland and convinced him to decommit and, you know, enter the transfer portal or decommit. I guess he wouldn't even have to enter the transfer portal, but they convinced him to decommit, probably threw a large amount of money at him to come to the University of Arkansas, right? Basically, the University of Texas is trying to say they think Arkansas paid Ron Holland to decommit from the University of Texas. And I guess it wouldn't be considered Arkansas. It would be go to Arkansas. But my question is, how does it benefit the University of Texas to play hardball in this scenario? And the reason I think it's because of Arkansas is because Texas would not have to release Ron Holland from his NLI to go play in the G League, nor would he need a release from his NLI to go play in the G League. He could just go do it. Like, I don't think they ever released A.J. Johnson from his NLI, but that does not affect him signing with a professional basketball team in Australia. The same thing with Ron Holland. Ron Holland can go play for the G League whenever he wants to without being released from his NLI, but he can't go to the University of Arkansas without being released from his NLI. And it makes me think that the University of Texas thinks that he wants to be released from his NLI to go to the University of Arkansas, and Texas is trying to play hardball in this scenario. Now, of course, Ron Holland is arguably the best high school recruit in the country. He's somebody that would have been really good for the University of Texas on the court. He's also somebody that I think would have been really good for the University of Texas in recruiting moving forward, right? Because we've seen so many schools be able to come into that DFW area, be able to come into Texas and take away the top talent. We saw just last year that Carson Edwards went to Kentucky from the DFW area. Anthony Black went to Arkansas from the DFW area. Keontae George stayed in Texas but chose Baylor over the University of Texas. And Arterio Morris chose Texas but ended up at Kansas a year later. So right now you don't have a ton of cachet in terms of recruiting in the state of Texas. I think Ron Holland would have been a big step forward in that regard. But on the same token, all of these recruits talk. And now the University of Texas, whether justified or not, looks a little bit messy and it looks a little bit toxic because 2 weeks later, you still have not released Ron Holland from his NLI. And whether you think there was tampering or funny business or not, one, you really can't do anything about it. Two, you can't stop Ron Holland from not playing at the University of Texas. And three, the longer you try to play hardball and try to make it seem as though there was some funny business and you're looking into it, the longer you keep Ron Holland on his NLI against his will, when I think he's the reason this story came out, period, it's only going to affect recruiting moving forward. Obviously, Ron Holland is a tough loss, and obviously it's a tough loss to the staff and this program to have to say bye to Ron Holland, specifically if he stays in college basketball and goes and plays for Arkansas. But it's just something that you have to do. You have to release him from his NLI, and you have to wish him the best moving forward. Because if recruits and families look at the University of Texas as a school that does not have their best interests of their players moving forward, if recruits start to look at the University of Texas as a school that did not release Ron Holland from his NLI either in a timely fashion or did not release him, period, then that's only going to affect your recruiting in a negative way moving forward. Like I said, Ron Holland is a huge loss if he decides not to come back to the University of Texas. And I understand why you would be upset if a school like Arkansas essentially paid Ron Holland to leave the University of Texas and go down to Fayetteville. But the game is the game, and if that's what happened, then you lost, right? But you need to release him from his NLI because you've already lost Ron Holland, and slow playing and hard playing Ron Holland like this could be the reason you lose out on recruits in the future. Now, a quick word from our sponsors, and we're going to talk about two players that entered the transfer portal yesterday, two players that Texas is very familiar with, and two players that I think Texas is going to show interest in the transfer portal. So two very important dates, I believe today, either today, May 11th or yesterday, May 10th, was the last day to enter the transfer portal. June 1st is the last day for players that entered the draft to withdraw their name from the draft. So if we're going to hear anything on Tyrese Hunter and Dylan Mitchell, it would be before June 1st. Now, Ronnie Terry spoke. I'm not sure exactly where they were. I think they were in San Antonio. I know Vic Schaefer, Ronnie Terry and Steve Sarkisian were there, right? Just doing their coaches rounds, speaking to the boosters and different people around the state. And he mentioned that, you know, they're really excited about the transfers they brought in. And he expects to hear from Tyrese Hunter in terms of the decision. Let's just say in the next week. He said maybe in the next few days, but let's just say in the next week. If I had to predict what is going on right now, I think Dylan Mitchell stays in the draft. I think he hears his name in the first 45 picks, probably maybe even a little bit higher than that. And I think that Tyrese Hunter does end up returning to the 40 acres. You know, like I said yesterday, when you don't get invited to the G League Elite Camp, which 45 players get invited to, you don't get invited to the draft combine, which 78 players get invited to. There's 60 spots in the NBA draft, 123 players working out in front of NBA scouts in an official capacity. That doesn't even count Victor Wembanyama, who's not working out in the NBA combine. So really it's 124 prospects, and your name is not on either one of those lists. That tells me you probably want to come back to the University of Texas for another year. So I'm going to predict that Dylan Mitchell does not come back. He gets drafted. Tyrese Hunter comes back as your starting two guard next to Max Abmas. Now, we're talking about two players that did enter the transfer portal either yesterday before the deadline or ahead of today's deadline. One of them is a former five-star recruit, Julian Phillips from Tennessee. He was the 19th ranked high school player last year. Coming out of high school, was a true freshman at Tennessee last year. Texas did play against him when they played against Tennessee on the road. Did not do much in that game, but obviously somebody with five-star talent, 6'8", 200. And now I think you have a void at that wing position, right? At your small forward position, you have a void with Ron Holland decommitting. And the only other two players you have at that position are Brock Cunningham, who I think does better off the bench, and then Alex, I'm not going to butcher his last name, but we haven't seen enough of him in college basketball to say he's a viable starter for this Texas basketball team. 6'8", 200, good size, good length at that three position, 8 points, five rebounds, and 1.5 assists last year as a true freshman. You did see him start to, you know, kind of be in the rotation a lot less and less in their last game against FAU, losing in the tournament. He only played 12 minutes in that game, I believe. So he did kind of fall out the rotation. You see that a lot with true freshmen. It's just hard for them to excel in college basketball. His shooting splits were 41, 24, and 82, right? Looks a lot like a true freshman. And when you talk about that 24% from the three-point line, obviously that is not good at all. But he only took 46 attempts on the season. So even though he wasn't a great three-point shooter, he's not somebody that took a huge number of them or relied on them for his scoring. So I think he's probably better than a 24% three-point shooter. But the good thing is he doesn't, you know, fall in love with the three-point line, especially for somebody that shot 24% from the three-point line last year. When you look at two of his best games, he had 25-8 with one block and two steals against USC last year on 54% from the field, 100% from the three, and 83% from the free throw line. He also had an 18-11 game against Mississippi State. And I think what he would bring to this Texas basketball team is rebounding, inside the arc scoring, athleticism, and playmaking. 1.5 assists from the small forward position coming off the bench, somebody that can get his teammates involved. And I think you have a really good resource, right? You can reach out to Rick Barnes, who is Ronnie Terry's mentor and one of his best friends, and ask, hey, what's going on? Why is this five-star who only played 1 year at Tennessee entering the transfer portal? And I think, you know, of course, Rick Barnes would have no reason to lie to Rodney Terry. So I think you can find out everything you need to about Julian Phillips from Rick Barnes. You also played against him last year, so you saw him up close and personal. And, you know, I think Rodney Terry will do his due diligence. Another player that you played against twice recently that entered the transfer portal is Arthur Kaluma from Creighton. He is 6'7", 225. And I just want to, you know, really quickly, this speaks to how hard it is to not only recruit a roster in college basketball, but maintain a roster in college basketball. When you look at how good Creighton has been over the last few years, they have a great coach, a great program that's able to compete in the Big East every year. And yet they still lost Christian Bishop to Texas in the transfer portal. They just lost Andrew Nimhard, their starting point guard, in the transfer portal to Gonzaga. And now they've lost Arthur Kaluma in the transfer portal as well. So three of their best players over the last 4 years have entered the transfer portal. And this is a great basketball program in the Big East. It's hard to win in college basketball, and I think we should give Rodney Terry some slack for some players leaving the program as soon as he got the head coaching job, because as we're seeing, this is happening at literally every program in the country. And then when you talk about what he was able to do last year, averaged 12 points a game, 6 rebounds, 1.6 assists, somebody with 2 years of college basketball experience, I expect him to be even better in his third. 42% from the floor, 31% from the three-point line on 132 attempts, so he did have a very high volume there, and then 73% from the free throw line. What's interesting about his three-point shooting, he only shot 31% on 132 attempts, right? You either want him to lower the attempts or increase his shooting percentage or both. But he did have 15 games last year where he shot over 40% from three. So what that tells me is there's probably a lot of games where he put up a lot of threes, a lot of bad threes, and that affected his efficiency. But in half his games, he shot over 40% from three. So somebody that's a streaky three-point shooter, but you definitely don't want to leave him open. He's capable of making you pay. When you look at two of his best games last year, 27 points, 3 rebounds against BYU on 57% from the floor, 57% from the three-point line. He went 4 of 7 from three. Like I said, he can be streaky, but when he's hot, he's hot, and you got to guard him. And 63% from the free throw line. I don't know how you can shoot 57% from three and 63% from the free throw line, but that's neither here nor there. Another really good game he had last year was 20-9 against Xavier, 2 of 5 from the three. So I think when you look at Arthur Kaluma and Julian Phillips, they're two players that can play the wing for you, two players that can rebound for you, two players that can be streaky from the three-point line, but can definitely knock down shots, two players that can score around the rim. And I think two players that in Rodney Terry's system, of course, are going to have to bring some defense and some playmaking. So we'll see what happens. I know that Texas has already reached out, at least that's what I've seen on Twitter, to Julian Phillips. And of course, right, you could just ask Rick Barnes what's going on with that situation. And then you're familiar with Arthur Kaluma because you've played against Creighton the last 2 years and you've seen him up close and personal. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Locked On Longhorns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hook 'em.